Hey, bosses, before we kick off this special quarterly update episode, I want to tell you about our Patreon. And that's because if you just listen to the podcast, you're only getting about half of the actual quarterly update. The entire thing on video or audio is available now to our Patreons and frankly has been in there for about 2 weeks. So that's another reason to join Patreon. Sam and Johnny go deep into their portfolios and they also have full screenshots of their accounts that you're not going to get here on the podcast. So sign up now. You can do it for as low as $5 a month. It's investlikeaboss.com. Click become a Patreon and you'll have instant access to not only this quarterly update, but all of our previous quarterly updates for the past 3+ years. And we also make bonus episodes in there. Our Patreons have been enjoying multiple bonus episodes that you can't get on the regular podcast feed. And we also post buy and trade alerts and so much more. We're trying to provide you guys with a fantastic value and it just $5 a month. I really think it is. So check it out. It's investlikeaboss.com. Click become a Patreon. One more time, investlikeaboss.com. Click become a Patreon and you are in. In the meantime, though, enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
It's the quarterly updates. Hey, guys, and welcome to the show. Thank you so much for listening. And to the Patreons, we are watching the video. Sam, where are you with this white background?
It's my new apartment in Bangkok.
It looks like you're in a... What do you call those all white rooms where your arms are tied behind you?
Yeah, hopefully not. But it does kind of look like a pretty clean background. I just noticed it's my first time like recording with this background. But no, I'm just literally in my living room of a place I just rented in Bangkok. Much more on that because it's a hell of a story.
Okay.
But I've been here since I left the monastery, which if you guys haven't heard that story, we recorded a Patreon exclusive on that. It's about 40 minutes long, just talking about that experience, which was now almost a full 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's awesome. Actually, there was a Patreon question about that, but let's get into that a little bit later. Okay. First, you know, something I realized is we used to drink something on every episode. What happened to that?
Well, Johnny, some things never change for me, buddy. I got a glass of red wine right here, but you might be a different story.
Speaking of red wine, I got something as a birthday gift.
It looks Italian?
It's Italian. Any idea what this is? So someone brought this to my birthday.
Where's it from?
Italy. So at first I thought I was Argentinian because the guy brought it, he's Italian from Argentina. And I just assumed this was like a cheap bottle of wine because it's big. Mm-hmm. It's like a 3-liter bottle of wine or 1.5 liter. I almost used it to make sangria.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like casually the week later, he mentioned how much this bottle was. And I was like, thank God we didn't pour 3 glasses and then just like leave the rest of it.
Well, I don't think it's like really going to matter to you. Rather, would you know the difference if you drank really good wine or just enjoyed it in sangria? Like as long as you enjoy it, you know?
Well, actually I would have been annoyed at how much he spent for me.
Yeah.
You know, so it was my birthday last week. And everybody brought, you know, a bottle of alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. And as you do, I don't appreciate good wine.
I would definitely never get you good wine for a present. Yeah.
Like you could literally buy me the box wine or the dinosaur that they sell in Spain and I'll be okay. So I would have felt bad.
Poor guy's probably listening to this right now thinking... I want my money back.
Yeah, no, he can have the bottle back. Actually, I told him I'm gonna save it for when he comes back next time, and then we'll drink it together, and that way somebody can enjoy it.
That's good. Yeah, bring it to Spain, man. I'll drink it with you. I'm actually drinking Italian wine as well right now.
Well, you know what?
Funny.
We'll save this. So if you want to come visit here, we can crack it open.
All right. Well, happy belated birthday. I know I was on time with my birthday wish, but
appreciate that.
The one in the books. Yeah, man.
So what I'm actually drinking is a cup of tea, some Earl Grey, in a nice ceramic mug that a friend got me for my birthday. So cheers.
Birthday presents all around.
Yeah, yeah.
So guys, this is our quarterly updates. For new listeners, what we usually do is we break it into two parts. First part is personal updates. These are kind of our public updates, a lot about life, what's new, where we've been, anything on the personal side. And then we separate out the second half, which is our personal investment updates. And that's where we kind of open up the books of everything in our portfolio and share that with currently our Patreons.
Yeah. So that one's Patreon only. And that's where Sam and I are a little bit more, transparent with kind of more private stuff, especially like financial numbers. Mm-hmm. But as another perk as a Patreon, you can always ask questions that we'll answer in these episodes. So the first one, A Downs, mm-hmm. a Patreon member who says, Sam, why did you do the monastery experience and not a 10-day silent Vipassana?
Ooh, that's a good question. Primarily because of the length, mm-hmm. like 10 days is a scary time for me to be kind of locked away just doing one thing. So this was only 5 days. Also, I knew I could leave early if I wanted to. And this was a little bit more what I was looking for right now, which was kind of learning more of the, you know, they call the Buddhist teachings the Dhamma. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more philosophy. My meditation practice is horrible, but mm-hmm. I've been studying the Dhamma for years and I love it, but I've rarely had the opportunity to talk to very, say, like seasoned or advanced practitioners. Mm-hmm. And this monastery was where most of the kind of, what would you call them, like high ranking or very well-known, reputable English speaking monks have mm-hmm. gone and practiced. Going back to the 1960s, like a lot of the big name monks right now, English monks, they all went and studied under this Thai monk called Ajahn Chah, mm-hmm. and branched out kind of all over like Australia, England, the USA, and started monasteries there. And so there's a long lineage of them going to this specific Wat and getting kind of training or ordaining and staying for years. So I just wanted that experience. But I will say that most of the people there that were practicing, most of the laymen, and as a prerequisite of going there, they suggested that you had that 10-day meditation retreat under your belt. And most of the laymen there had already done that. So I was behind on that stuff. Yeah.
So actually, the first time I ever meditated was at a 10-day silent Vipassana, and I had mm-hmm. no idea what I was doing. I knew nothing about the Dhamma or what the principles of Buddhism. There was no guidance. I didn't even know. I couldn't sit for more than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I was just so bored. And after five days, I walked up and I left.
Oh, man. I'm so happy to hear that, because I was I didn't know where the story was going.
No, I wanted to leave the second day. Yeah. Like it was just tough being with your own thoughts. I'm just sitting there. You know, meditation sounds easy because you literally just don't do anything, but it's tough being by yourself. Me not knowing how to meditate, I just had all these thoughts in my head, and I started flashing my whole life before me. And actually, that's what I ended up doing those 5 days. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to replay every moment I've ever had in my life. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I wasn't really meditating in that traditional sense, but it was more like I would let memories come to me. I would relive them. And then if they were happy memory, I would just like smile and kind of let it go. But if it was a unhappy memory, which it was always more vivid, I would also just, just be like, all right, I have that. Let's let it go. And that actually helped me a lot. It really transformed me. So it was worth it. And after I had left, like on that fifth day, or maybe it was even the fourth day, I walked, basically out of the monastery to the nearest village, where I actually had met a monk the mm-hmm. day before I started the Vipassana. And I just went to go talk to him. I was like, hey, man, like I can't do this. Like, I don't know how to meditate. I don't know what to do. And he actually just listened to me rant for 20 minutes and just get it off my chest. Mm-hmm. Then he's like, are you ready to go back? And I was like, yeah, I guess so. So he didn't give me any like actual advice or anything. I think he knew I just needed to just talk and rant and get everything off my mind. And yeah, I somehow stayed to that, but it was tough.
Wait, so you left after 5 days and then you went back?
Yeah, I mean, I technically only left for like an hour or two.
Wow, man. Yeah. Well, good for, I had no idea that you did that. So hats off to you. Hats off to anybody who's done that. I haven't done it. And I'm sure you took something away from it.
Oh yeah, so much.
And people that I talked to there were like, that was the most life-changing experience ever. Yeah. In terms of just everything that they were trying to, I think they probably went into it with a little bit more practice and a little bit more ground, foundation for meditation. So when they got in, it was like kind of day three or four, they're starting to get real deep. Mm-hmm. For me, I never put much importance on meditation. And the reason is that I've known meditators that are like, they talk that they can meditate for hours or 2 hours, and like very deep meditators, and they're total assholes. Like they are corrupt people. I'm like, okay, what's it matter if you can sit silently and control your thoughts if you haven't transformed at all? You haven't transformed your heart or your consciousness. Or so I put much more effort on like on the purification of heart, thoughts, mind, you know, good action, good intention. But what I realized from everyone that I spoke to there is that you got to do both, you know. And some of the monks I talked to were saying the same thing. They're like, yeah, we have these like insanely advanced meditators, but they have absolutely no emotional control. And then you have some people that are, you know, fully into the Dhamma and can like repeat all the sutras and everything, but they have no concentration, you know. And so like it all goes hand in hand. It's kind of like you got to have the full wheel of everything to get really deep into this stuff. But what I realized is like in my meditation practice, dude, like my mind was just so agitated in this place. Mm-hmm. Like all of the circumstances of that environment in aggregate are just, I felt like I was in a prisoner of war camp.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like you, you know, like I think yours is much more just the silence and the solitude. Mine was just the general conditions, the heat, the mosquitoes, the not sleeping, the sitting cross-legged for 4 hours a day. And then also being the worst in there. Mm. We're watching everybody else sit relatively calmly for these times. And I'm just like dying.
I was the exact same way, And it was similar conditions. I had a bed, but it was a wooden bed and had a wooden pillow. So
if it's a wooden bed, is it even called a bed?
I mean, it's just a raised platform, I guess. So yeah,
it was a wooden bed, but it was a bed. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean, and it literally just had like, it was a piece of wood as a pillow, but it was shaped as a pillow. So I guess it counts.
Yeah. But well, I guess you and I both took something valuable away. We're both glad we went through it.
Yeah. And actually, I don't know if they still do it, but I had heard that there was a monastery in Koh Samui, of all places, that has a Vipassana for beginners or foreigners that's only like 4 or 5 days long. So I think that would have been perfect.
I think I've seen that as well. And supposedly these Vipassanas, long lines, like you need to sign up. They're all over the world now. This stuff is, there's massive infrastructure for this, meditation retreats globally. These Vipassanas, 10 days, although they are everywhere, I think it's like a 3-month typical waiting list to get in one of these, which I think is fantastic news for the world.
Yeah.
But I'm shocked that they're so in demand, because that's a big, scary commitment.
Yeah, but I think it's something really needed. I mean, honestly, it really changed me as a person. Mm-hmm. There's a whole chapter about it in my book, 12 Weeks in Thailand. I'll send you a copy. You can take a look. But there was like these 10 lessons that I learned from it that I can't name them off the top of my head anymore. But I remember those are things that stuck with me for years, you know, and it really changed me as a person. So I recommend everyone go through one. Most of them are free as well. Is that still the case or no?
The monastery I went to is free, and most of, you know, in fact, one cool thing about Buddhism is you can really dive into it for free. So like all the Buddhist books, you can find some that are like on Amazon that you pay for. They're by like private authors, but most of the monks that they write their books, they're published through monasteries and they're for free distribution. So most of the monasteries you can go to and get free books. There's Buddhist libraries, like especially all over Thailand, and you just show up and they'll just give you books. And these are like amazing, incredible books, even some like old historic books and stuff that you can borrow or have for free.
That's cool. I miss Thailand. I definitely want to go back soon. How's life there?
My thoughts are always the same about Thailand. You know, it's like I've been visiting here for 10 years. Yeah. I mean, I love visiting, but I've never gotten comfortable enough to live here. And especially after I've been in Bangkok for like 3 weeks in a nice apartment. But after leaving that temple, I'm just like, you ever like drive down the streets in like Bangkok or a big city and you see like one of those rivers that don't really move, or they're called like a canal and like they don't really move. And there's all this overgrowth in them. And I was watching this guy, it's just on the side of like a highway, and this guy's in, you know, knee high boots and they're like kind of fishing. And I'm like, good heavens. Like who would eat a fish out of here? But you know what? Like if you live in Bangkok, you are that fish.
Yeah.
Like you are that fish, and you become that fish if you stay here for too long. Anyone that's been here long enough knows it. It's like a big, dirty, grimy city with bad pollution, and you know there's a vibrance here that's amazing, but you slowly become that fish if you stay here too long. So I'm using this as kind of a base for now. Like I need to travel around Southeast Asia a lot for work. Going to China next in August for a couple of weeks for work, going to Cambodia for a charity project for a week. So I think it's a great base. You know, I still think it's a great place to be based out of, but yeah, I can't see myself staying here long term. Yeah. I really miss, after I'm here for this long, I just love thinking about Barcelona and like the clean streets, nice air. Hot as hell there right now, but you know, that's kind of the 6 week period of mid-July, August that's like super hot. But besides that, just like walking up and down the tree lined streets, fresh air, mountains in the background, beach in the background, low buildings. You know, most of Barcelona is like 5 stories high or less, blue skies every day. It's just like the balance of the city is like so incredible that it just grows on you. It doesn't, you don't get burned out there. In Bangkok, after like 2 weeks, first, I never want to walk outside because it's just like it's hot, rain, pollution, traffic jam, etc. It's just like not pleasant, you know? So, you know, it is what it is. I keep coming back. Obviously, I love it here, but I just don't think it's a long-term environment.
I can see that, but I would definitely rather base myself in Thailand than in Cambodia or China long-term.
Yeah. Well, there's the alternatives, right? In the region.
So actually another Patreon question was about Thailand. He asked, basically says, you know, Chiang Mai versus Bangkok's lifestyle, or maybe Jom Tien for couples or families. What are your thoughts? What would you choose?
Well, why don't you start on Jom Tien? Because I think we had a similar experience there, and then I'll jump in with the other two.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously out of all those places, Chiang Mai is the place I spent the most time. I think Chiang Mai is the perfect kind of city because it's the only real walkable city in Thailand, or at least the old town and the Neman Haman area where I lived. And most of the year it's actually pretty nice, except for burning season, which is like March, April, where the air pollution gets really bad. But if you go there in, let's say, October, November, December, January, it's pretty cool because it's not too hot. You have nice mountains in the background, you have lots of nature. And if you want to go to the islands, you hop on a direct flight on AirAsia for less than $100 round trip. And you can go down to the islands for a few days and check it out. I never wanted to live on the islands full time just because you get tired of it and you want to be in a big city. Island mentality really is a thing. And Bangkok, I never wanted to live in because exactly what you said. It's just crowded. It's busy. You can't really walk anywhere except for in a mall. You just feel like this small fish in this big, you know, system, which I never liked. What I liked about Jom Tien is it's 2 hours from Bangkok, so it's easy to, you know, to get there. It's like a $40 taxi ride. And you're by a beach. It's not the nicest beach, but it's a beach. It's swimmable. There's an island nearby. You can go for day trips, and that's nice. But you kind of just get a little bit more of that Chiang Mai vibe, where lots of cafes and coffee shops that you can walk around. Mm-hmm. It's relatively quiet, except for on weekends where all the tourists come. And it's cheap. And it's kind of, it hits most of the things that I like. It's not perfect, but it's the only good value left in Thailand, besides maybe Chiang Mai. And it's It has a beach.
I didn't like Jom Tien at all. I was there for three days. I was like, yeah, this I could see it. I can feel it. But then I felt like it's a place, you know, depending on what budget you're on, if you're like a pensioner or something, it could be a great place. It's like for all the reasons Johnny said. But after a week there, I was just like, man, this is, I don't know, not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Zero inspiration. Things aren't that nice. It was like pretty much spend all of the day like in one cafe. Proximity to Bangkok's good, but what I think we'll see in the next few years is like most of these places aren't perfect. And so I think you'll see like new cities and new like centers starting to pop up. Like Chiang Mai's smoky season seems to be getting worse, which for families makes it very difficult because it's right in the middle of the school year. So what do you do for practically three months of like terrible air quality? Like you can't just pick up and leave really that easily. If you're a digital nomad, it's much easier, right? But if you go like outside of Chiang Mai, there's lots of families kind of move into the outskirts of Chiang Mai. But where it seems to be a really popular place now and people are starting to talk a lot about, 2 hours outside of Bangkok, it's a place called Koh Yai, if you're familiar with that, Johnny.
No, is that island?
So it sounds like an island. It's actually northeast of Bangkok, two and a half hours. And it, like, from all the photos, it looks like Chiang Mai. There's like mountains in the background and rice paddy fields and really beautiful modern cafes popping up. And supposedly it's where like all the Bangkok money is going and building second houses and stuff. So I'm going to go check that out in a couple weeks. And then there's other places like up north. I mean, the north of Thailand's beautiful. It's like, it's all like Chiang Mai. It's just not as developed, but places like Nan or Lampang, Chiang Rai is pretty cool. So as I think more people get kind of beat up by Bangkok, you see, and like Thais are super creative, and like their style and craft is awesome. Like the cafes they build and the craft goods and stuff, it's like all cute. And there's a lot of Japanese influence here. So I think you start seeing new places start to pop up, and kind of populations from Bangkok and Chiang Mai start to kind of disperse to these other areas.
Yeah, I can see that. We'll see when I get back next year for another trip. Another Patreon question by Mark is, what about a Tajikistan update?
Oh, man. Gosh, when was the last time we talked about Tajikistan? It was probably 2 quarters ago. I haven't been back since. I forget how much we spoke about it, but I had an absolutely incredible trip there for work recently. So we built a factory there with the government of Tajikistan for a new business that I'm part of. And it took about 50% longer to get that running. And then we thought everything was tied up with the Tajikistan government, because they're like basically totally embedded with us in this project. But once we started manufacturing the product, they got really strict and concerned, I guess, about the product ingredients and how it's being made and stuff. It was really kind of weird, but it set our production back behind schedule about 3 or 4 months. Seems to be all good now. But what happened actually that really kind of sucks is, like, we started this project before the war broke out with Ukraine and Russia. Uh-huh. And that was our major like logistics route. So now it's taking us an extra month to get product into the UK, because we can't take it in our typical route. So it's got to like go over land in this really odd, weird route. So we're kind of in a bad spot in terms of like being able to use that for our full capacity. So we'll probably end up building a warehouse somewhere in Europe, not warehouse, manufacturing facility, either in Poland or the UK later this year. Once we get the first product out of Tajikistan and get our sales numbers up, then we'll build something else there.
Yeah, you know, I completely forgot about Tajikistan until right now, because I remember you talking about it and it sounded exciting. But man, yeah, that was really before the war. That was, lots of change since then.
Yeah, logistics is a killer out of there right now.
Yeah, I can see that. Actually, I missed this question, but Willie, another Patreon, asks about your BKK spot. So you had posted, I don't know if it was an Instagram post or something, just saying like my new apartment in Bangkok, and everybody was speculating if you bought a place, you signed a year lease, or what was that?
Hey bosses, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. The show will be right back.
Yeah. So after Jom Tien, I came to Bangkok, trying to figure out what I was going to do for the year. I knew I needed to spend time in and around Asia. Like I want to spend time in Japan. I have a bunch of work and charity projects going on here. So I needed a base. And as Johnny and I were like living out of different hotels every 3 days, I was just like, I can't do this. And the alternative is maybe rent a place, like a service department month to month. But then it's kind of the same situation. Like you never settled. So like, man, for this, the same, for much cheaper, I can just rent a place in Bangkok. And if all I do is use it for a closet and a place to regroup, it's kind of fine. You know, it's not expensive. It's like $1,200 a month here. So I signed a 12-month lease. It's right in the middle of Bangkok on a street called Tong Lor in Sukhumvit. Mm-hmm. I got to tell this story, because it's just like, it's too like coincidental. Okay. So I get back from anyone that's listened to the Patreon exclusive about the monastery. I had this incredible experience. It kind of came full circle with like learning, having an obstacle, you know, which was basically a very challenging person that was there. I had the opportunity to address it, which I basically had this tension in my chest. I thought the guy was misbehaving and acting inappropriately. And I kind of called him out in public. Then I had a bit of remorse. Like, did I do that right? I went and talked to the head monk, and kind of head monk gave me like an hour long talk and discussion on like maybe the better way to handle it. I took that as like a deep learning experience. And then kind of fate put me and this guy in a taxi at the end of the trip and allowed me to like resolve the situation, then leave that monastery like with this full learning cycle.
Nice.
So I get out of that. And then on my flight back to Bangkok, I had this one of the senior monks on the plane. This is like this incredible experience. Again, like I decided to move my flight up early. I changed my flight. I end up getting like sat right next to this head monk. I'm like, this is insane. I get to talk to him for an hour at the airport, like some mate, like these guys are so smart, man. Like you see these guys in orange robes and you're like, what is this guy doing? Like there's all this like mystery and curiosity about him, but you don't expect him to be just like these insanely smart people, man. These guys are just like PhDs in psychology to another degree. And I get to talk to him, have an amazing experience, and another like deep learning session. And then I'm like, I get out of it. I'm like, man, I've learned so much. You know, I'm so much more wise and able to handle all these situations that come at me in life. Well, then I get into my place, and if anyone knows me, like, I'm a light sleeper. I sleep with earplugs in every night. I'm quite anxious about sleep. And I get into my new apartment, and first night's okay. Second night, 3 a.m., there's a party next door, like next to my neighbor. So my bedroom shares a wall with their living room. 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., they're partying. Now, this is like a nice higher end place, like middle of Tonglor. I moved in here because it's like 70% Japanese people. So I'm like, oh, it'd be great. Like, nice, clean building, respectful community. So I didn't do anything that night. I fought the urge to go like pound on the door. And, you know, my heart was beating like super fast. And I was like very upset, like about the whole situation, like 3 to 6 a.m. Come on, man. That's crazy. So then I reported to the property management. They talked to the people like, it's okay. We resolved it. Night three, second night, another party, 3 to 6 a.m. Again, like same thing happens. I fight the urge to go pound on the door, et cetera. So this happens four nights in a row.
Oh my God.
So now at this point, I'm like, oh my God, I have like, my mind's spinning. Like, who is this? Like, it's like mafia. It's somebody in a club scene that like, maybe they own a club and they come back and have an after party. Maybe it's like some prostitution ring or something, you know, like, but I can hear them in there doing drugs. Like they have one of those helium tanks that's going, psh, and then it's like quiet for 10 seconds and then burst out laughing. Right. Yeah. And I'm just like, really? Like 3 to 6 a.m. Until the sun rises. And when the sun rises, they all clear out. And okay. I'm just like, and I had left, and I'm like, how would old Sam handle this? I would have gone and try like kick down the door, like cursing out everyone. So instead, after night two, I get, I think, I need to apply all these learnings. Like, how do I resolve this? Fight the emotion. Don't act on the emotion. Suppress it, you know, act neutrally. So then I find out it's a girl. It's a Thai girl that owns the place or rents the place. I go and buy a flower and like make a nice card and say, hi, I'm Sam. I'm your neighbor. Introduce myself. Would love to, you know, be friendly with you. Can we have coffee or something? You know? So I'm like, if I'm gonna have to live with this, I'd rather be friends with the person that's waking me up versus thinking there's some monster drug addict next door, you know?
Okay.
Well, they didn't respond. They didn't respond to this, right? I left them my WhatsApp. I said, knock on my door. Nothing happened, but they took the flowers. So this happens 5 times in 7 days.
Okay.
I haven't slept. I'm a mess. I'm trying to sleep on my couch. I can't, you know, property managers come and say something to them a few times. So finally, like after 1 week, I'm like, what can I do? You know, I'm not going to feel terrible about this. So I'll just tell the property manager I'm going to move out.
Yeah.
And that's what I said. And then they're like, well, let me try to talk to them one more time. And I'm like, fine. So where it stands right now, it's like, it's night 8 or 9. Uh-huh. The last 2 nights there hasn't been noise, but you know, I'm not holding my breath. This problem is going to go away. Like you don't go from partying 5 nights a week
to zero. Yeah.
Zero. And that's the limit. Like zero is the limit. I don't want to be, no one wants to be woke up once a month by a party next door. Right. Yeah, so like the limit's zero and they're doing it 5 times a week, but yeah, man. So that's my story of my place in Bangkok. I tend to have bad luck with this. Like I often get really noisy, disrespectful neighbors. I think that, you know, I'm kind of this in the spiritual realm right now of believing like, you know, karma and reincarnation and all this stuff. And I do think that this is coming back to me because I haven't resolved it properly in the past. Like I have cursed out a lot of neighbors and handled things incorrectly. I think this is just another like test coming my way, and I'm trying to resolve it better this time. But I have to say, this is the chances of this happening. It got to be like 1 in 10 million or something like that type of that level of party.
Yeah.
It's partying next to you. Yeah. That's intense.
Well, let me ask you this.
You get this in big cities, right?
Yeah.
Get this in big cities.
So I don't know how you, when you say you've let it bottle up and kind of go wild, go extreme. Actually, this is how we met. Do you remember that?
Not in this capacity, but yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a party, but when you thought my girlfriend at the time or someone stole your helmet.
Right.
You got really upset. Like it was... Oh, Sam left the room.
I remember this.
Yeah.
You finish the story, but I can already feel like the recognition that I jumped to an early conclusion and made a mistake, so, you know?
I don't remember specifically how you overreacted, but I remember it was an overreaction of your helmet going missing. From your side, you were upset because your helmet got stolen, you bought a new one, and then it went missing again. So, and when you saw a similar helmet on someone else's bike, you're like, okay, this is the asshole who stole it. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go 100% or 1000%, 120% upset. And then when you realized that it wasn't the same one, then you went 110% the other way. You brought wine and you were like really apologetic. I can see that's like the rubber band of Sam. It's either one extreme or the other, you know?
Yeah. And you're exactly right, Johnny. And that, like, I do remember that. I think I wrote like a kind of a nasty note, like, why, like, you guys stole my helmet and left it on the door or something. And this is, I've always had very strong emotions. And on the positive side, like, I think I have some very good actions, like, that are heartfelt and, you know, heart led, and also like passionate about, you know, business projects and stuff that I think have contributed to some of the success. But I have been, you know, I have been very reactive and very judgmental throughout my life. And I've almost taken on myself thinking that it's a call to duty. Mm-hmm. Like, when I think someone's misbehaved, I'm sort of like an enforcer for society and go and like straighten that out. But often what happens is, like, I take action and I realize that I was incorrect, like in this situation that you're talking about. And I don't want to do that anymore. Like, what I've gone through and experienced, especially over the last handful of years, is like, life is difficult for everybody. Like, there's nobody that gets an easy ride in life. What do we have in common with the Queen? What do we have in common with Elon Musk? What do we have in common with anybody? And that's like, we have in common that we all want to suffer less. We all want to have more peace and find more fulfillment. But ultimately, like, it's a rough ride the whole way. We have ups and downs, but it's no easy ride. And so when people are acting inappropriately, like at the monastery, what I realized is there's usually a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, there's a reason. And the monks have this written above where they wash their bowls. It's in Pali, which is not English, but it translates to maybe there's a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And usually there is. People don't just act like idiots. You know, this person next to me that's partying like this, I'm sure I've got the judgment in my head wrong. Like, it could very well be, you know, someone who maybe one of their parents just died and they're grieving. Maybe they're
Who could be? It could be anything. But here's my question to you. Yeah. Have you even met this person yet? Have you even spoken to them?
No, but I've tried. I've knocked on the door. I left them a note. I left them all my contact information.
Next time it happens at 3 a.m. or whenever it's loud, have you ever thought about just going there and just ring the doorbell and not, you know, lashing out, going crazy, but just being like, hey, I'm sorry, but I'm trying to sleep.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to that point yet because
it would be the first step. Like, instead of...
This is actually a curious, like, thought experience for everyone. I'm curious what everyone would feel in that situation, because it's very easy from the outside to not be in that experience and to say, yeah, we just walk over and knock on the door. And that's what I think I would say to someone if I was in this situation. But I haven't gotten myself to a calm enough point yet to be able to do that.
Place down, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I tried. Like, night three, I went to my door. I opened the door, could hear everything that was going on inside, and my heart was just pounding. And I'm like, all right, they're doing drugs in there, you know? So, like, you don't know what the situation is going to be. And there's a high chance it's like Thai mafia, right? Thai mafia is running it a party room.
At the same time, we don't know. Like, it's like,
exactly. But I don't. It's like, I would feel better doing it if there was a foreigner in there. But the chances, like, the reason that it's a rare, rare situation that it's Thai people in there. Like, there's some money, there's some late night, there's drugs going on. I don't know. You know, I don't want to mess with it. So I went down and reported it instead. But I did get to their door and was about to knock, but my heart was going too much. I'm like, this, and it's not a good situation to be able to even have a simple request or conversation when you're like that worked up. So
I understand. I went through a similar situation last week where I've had some problems with my parking space in my apartment. There's only so many spaces for the amount of residents, and it's always kind of like a fight of who gets what, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's no like real clear, it's not like a clearly assigned parking. It's kind of just like who gets there first, but people who live there a long time, they're kind of like, no, that's my spot, you know?
Yeah.
And this lady who basically, so to kind of sum it up, I had a really crappy spot. I found a better one. And then I found out that the guy who normally parks there is actually like an emergency, he's like a doctor. and he needs to have access to space. And he was like, you know, look, I'm sorry, but like, you know, can you park in this other spot instead? This woman, she used to park here, but she's been gone for a year. That's your spot now. And I was like, okay, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. I start parking there. Everything was fine for a few months. And then this lady comes back and she says, I'm living here again. I want my spot back. And at first, I wanted to yell and be like, look, I just fucking, you know, changed spots two times already. Like, you've been gone. It's mine now. Like, you know, and she gave me all the reasons. She's like, you know, technically, this spot's mine because it's closer to this door, which is my building, and yours should be blah, blah, blah. And all these reasons, I wanted to argue with her, you know? Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know what? Let me just be kind and listen to everything she says and then just wait to the very end to let her get everything off her chest. She explains everything. And instead of saying, you know, arguing with her, I just say, what do you propose as a solution? Mm-hmm. And I just shut up and I just listen. Uh-huh. Even though in my mind, I wanted to argue and say, you know, counter every point she had just made. And she thought for a minute and she's like, okay. And she's like, well, how about this? This solution can be, you know, you can take this spot instead because this guy actually doesn't live here.
Yeah.
And then anytime that's busy, you're welcome to park in my spot. Just try not to if the other one's free. And it actually ended up being perfect. And actually, I like this new spot better. Everything worked out. But I can definitely have seen that if I had interrupted her and started countering her arguments, which were mostly wrong, to be honest. Like, you know, one of the arguments was she pays for the maintenance of the spot through her building fees. I wanted to say, well, I pay the same fee in my own, you know, like, but, you know, I was like, you know,
better burn her arguments out.
Yeah, let her just, you know, say everything she wants to say and then like just ask for the solution. So I know it's difficult, especially at 3 a.m. when you're like stressing out and you're like, fuck, I want to.
That's a tough. Yeah.
But, you know, maybe the solution would be, you know, just smile, be very polite, you know, even bow and be like, look, I'm sorry. Like, I just need to sleep.
Yeah.
And say like, and just instead of telling them, shut the fuck up, don't do this.
Yeah.
Just say like, you know, like, what do you think we can do?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, that when I sent him the card, I was going to be like, look, if you guys just tell me your schedule, what I want to be able to do is anticipate it. I just won't want it to be like random. And then you start going to sleep every night. Like now I'm going to sleep. I have a lot of anxiety about going to sleep. I'm like, wake up at 3. So it takes me 2 hours to fall asleep again, which is not good. But if they were just like, hey, you know, we're in the club business, you know, we'd let, you know, blah, 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 blah. Maybe Friday and Saturday, we'll have people over, try to be quiet. And then, you know what I would do? I would either sleep on my couch Friday and Saturday with like massive headphones on, or I'd just use Friday and Saturday to get out of town.
Because yeah, well, no, anyway. Like, you would just book a 5-star hotel every Friday, Saturday. Yeah,
right? That would be a totally fine solution for me. I'm a believer, like, to your point, Johnny, like if you can sit down and talk to somebody, the chances of you resolving it are quite like neutrally and let them talk things out. There's a good chance like you're going to, most humans are quite reasonable. Like they might be a little deluded in the head or have a bad circumstance currently that they're fighting, but they can be heard out and you can talk it out. And so that's, you know, that's my practice right now, is like fighting impulses, fighting reactions of the brain. And I think it's better for me and better for people around me.
I applaud you for going through the hard journey of getting through all this.
I applaud you for doing a 10-day Vipassana.
yeah. It was the toughest thing I've ever done, but it was absolutely worth it.
Dude, this stuff is so necessary for the world that we're living in right now. Massive, like things are just getting faster and faster and faster. Like just look around you. I mean, screen time is on like almost an exponential curve. Mm-hmm. It's been on like a linear curve. It's like going exponential. Like soon we'll be at, you know, most of us are spending more than half of our waking hours on a screen. That's just going to continue to increase, impulses and stimulation and drive coming in from everywhere. So we have to learn to fight impulses, to slow things down, concentration skills, all these things.
And that's actually a good segue into investment philosophies, because I think in the beginning when people first start investing and there's ups and downs in the market, people let their emotions take over and go crazy. Mm-hmm. Pretty recently, we've had some ups and downs in the markets, some investments actually go bankrupt. So when we come back from this break for the Patreons, we'll dive into our investment portfolios. And for the public members, if you want to watch the rest of the episode, just sign up as a Patreon at investlikeaboss.com. Click on support the show. Sam, anything else you want to say on this public portion before we take a break?
I'm sorry, I was meditating. Did you... But fully in another consciousness level.
Oh God! Don't become that douche. That meditation douche.
My 7-minute meditation practice just about hit its limit.
All right, guys, we're gonna take a break. Thank you to the Patreons. We'll see you in a second, and everyone else, we'll see you guys next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.